Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the rite of spring. Do you recognize it? It's the Bad Plus interpretation. You know the jazz trio, Bad Plus? Anyway, their interpretation of Stravinsky's The Rite of Spring, as excerpted on NPR yesterday. But don't look outside your window on this first full day of spring. It was snowing last hour here in Lower Manhattan. Then again, it was almost 80 degrees on Friday, and I guess that was still winter. So be patient. It'll happen. The crocuses are definitely bursting through all over. Well, New Jersey Senator, Democrat Bob Menendez is our first guest today. He's on the Foreign Relations Committee and has been a leading hawk on Libya, writing the Senate resolution 2 weeks ago that called for Gaddafi to step down, and last week championing a no-fly zone before it was passed by the UN Security Council. Menendez was also in a small group of congressional leaders who was briefed by President Obama Friday as the offensive was about to get underway. So we'll talk to Senator Menendez now about Libya and oil and perhaps more. Senator, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Good to be with you and your listeners.
Your resolution was for Gaddafi to leave. The military goal seems to be less than that. How do you think it's going so far in Libya?
Well, I think that the UN resolution under which we are working with our allies is to give, number one, those who are fighting for freedom inside of Libya the opportunity to achieve that freedom. Secondly, and maybe most importantly in the imminent stage, is to stop the slaughter of innocents. Gaddafi is ruthless and was using his jet fighters to drop bombs on civilian populations. And certainly, I think the world came together and has created now a set of circumstances where I think that slaughter of innocents has been, you know, stopped, and the opportunity for those seeking their freedom is more vigorous than it was before.
The Arab League, which also requested a no-fly zone, is already apparently uncomfortable with the amount of firepower the U.S. and the allies are using. Let me play you a clip of the president of the Arab League, Amr Moussa, speaking yesterday.
And so far as we are concerned, the Arab League, we requested the Security Council to establish a no-fly zone in order to protect the civilians, in addition to safe areas for the civilians to sit in without attacks on them. But the military developments that happened today, I really have no reports as yet.
So is this more aggressive than you had in mind as well, Senator?
Well, I think we have to understand that in order to establish a no-fly zone and leave both our and coalition allies together and the men and women who serve us safe in the process of establishing that no-fly zone, it takes a degree of military strikes to stop the command and control abilities, to knock out air monitoring systems, to ensure that the very civilians that the Arab League wants us to protect can be protected now. I think that what has been done to date is in pursuit of the very goals that the Arab League asked the United Nations to pursue. Now, if we could do it with a magic wand and stop all of Libyan air flights from taking place and stop the bombing from taking place and stop the tanks from moving forward on, you know, civilians, then we'd love to do that. But that's not the way it works.
You were one of the congressional leaders briefed by President Obama Friday, correct?
Yes, we were in that process.
And Republican New Jersey Congressman Scott Garrett was on the show the same day, and I asked him if constitutionally he thought Congress should have a say in whether we go to war. Listen to Congressman Garrett.
I would seem to think that the Congress should be playing a role here, whether it's a declaration of war or whether it's just giving the authorization to take military action, because this is not simply, as some people initially said, that we'll just be sitting on the sidelines issuing veiled threats. We may be engaged in direct military conduct action over there, and I could see Libya's leaders throwing it back and say that we have declared war in his country, but without congressional action.
Congressman Garrett on the show on Friday. Senator, your reaction? You've been historically for a robust congressional role in authorizing U.S. military action, right?
Well, I certainly have been for a robust congressional role when we are in the midst of war or pursuing a war. I don't think that that is exactly what we are doing at this point in time. We are largely on a humanitarian mission to protect Libyan civilians under a UN resolution, and I'm thrilled to see that for one of the first times the French and the British are leading the way on this, although we obviously have assets and have used assets in pursuit of that humanitarian mission. So I'm not ready. If the president wants to escalate any military effort, then of course I'd be for a robust congressional participation.
On being happy about the French and the British leading the way, you've heard some of your Republican colleagues criticize the Obama administration for being weak, for possibly squandering U.S. power in this context, even for how we got into this, or the president seemed to need to be dragged into this. Let me play one more clip of Republican Congressman Lindsey Graham on Fox News Sunday.
Well, I'm glad we're finally doing something. I don't know how many people have died as we wait to do something. I thank God for strong women in the Obama administration. I don't know what finally got the president to act, but I'm very worried that we're taking a back seat rather than a leadership role.
He said, thank God for strong women in the Obama administration. I guess he meant Secretary of State Clinton, U.S. Ambassador Rice, and the counsel Samantha Power, who's for human rights interventions. He could have said, thank God for strong women and Senator Menendez, but he didn't give you that credit.
Brian, first of all, I think only in Washington with my Republican colleagues can they both criticize the president for not acting precipitously and at the same time criticize him for acting, as we've heard from the same clips. This is a very unique set of circumstances. This is all about blame no matter what. I'm not one, as someone who voted against the war in Iraq, as someone who has a strong and different view on what we are doing in Afghanistan. I don't believe in a counterinsurgency effort. I believe in a counterterrorism effort. Those are fundamentally two different strategies requiring, in the second instance, less manpower than we are presently engaged in. So I don't have a cavalier attitude about the use of military force. However, I do think that when the world is watching the slaughter of innocents, when, in fact, we have a history with Gaddafi, his former justice minister, one of the leaders of the opposition now, has said that, in fact, Gaddafi now had ordered the bombing of the Pan Am 103 flight. We always suspected that. We didn't have any proof of that. This is potential proof of that, that killed many New Jersey citizens and several hundred Americans. A man who has engaged and actively training terrorists, a man who has mustard gas, and we're concerned about his potential use of that. I don't think he has a delivery system to be able to do that. But all of these factors are unique in Libya, and, I think we have taken the appropriate action to create the no-fly zone, to create the humanitarian relief, to stop the slaughter of innocents, and at the same time give those fighting for their freedom the opportunity to achieve it.
If we're doing this to protect civilians from violent repression during the Arab democracy movement, 45 peaceful protesters were slaughtered by our ostensible ally in Yemen on Friday. You know what's going on in Bahrain, and Syria's erupting now, too. These are some U.S. allies, some non-U.S. allies. Is there an Obama doctrine or a Menendez doctrine that can say when we intervene consistently or not to protect pro-democracy civilians?
Well, clearly what was compelling in the situation in Libya was the magnitude of what was going on, a dictator who says, we will search you out in every home, in every closet, in every way, and in essence, we will kill you. There was a very stated purpose of a very systemic process to seek to kill innocents.
So that's morally different enough than shooting up peaceful protesters in the square.
Of course, Brian, it's never that simple. You know that. I don't condone what is happening in those other countries, and the United States has called upon those other countries as we first called on Gaddafi. We didn't react to Gaddafi immediately, but even Gaddafi, after saying he was going to have a ceasefire, continued to bomb his citizens. Now, I don't see bombings of citizens taking place in those other countries. I do see killings taking place, and they alarm me and they concern me. But at the same time, the question is the magnitude of what was taking place in Libya and the necessity to try to stop that magnitude. You know, we'll continue to see how we can affect other countries and their course of events, hopefully, in a way that we can dissuade those governments to act, to stop acting violently against their citizens.
New Jersey Senator, Democratic Senator Robert Menendez, my guest on WNYC. One implication of the turmoil in the Arab world is rising oil prices, as you know, and I see that you have issued a call for U.S. oil companies to use it or lose it on their drilling leases. What do you mean by the phrase use it or lose it?
Well, we have 60 million of 80 million acres that the gas and oil companies have federal leases on, and yet 60 million of that 80 million of those acres of federal leases are not being pursued in terms of exploration by the oil and gas industry. And it just seems to me that before there is a call for having more leases issued, that they should start exploring and pursuing oil and gas on the leases they already have. So either they use the 60 million acres that they already have the right to explore, or they should lose that opportunity, and others willing to do so should be given that opportunity. Many times, the oil companies that already have record profits hold these, one, to improve their stock price, and two, to have competitors not be able to pursue them. Well, we can't afford that, and certainly as there is a call for production, it just seems to me that when we've got 60 million acres already licensed to produce, that they should either seek to produce or they should lose the opportunity.
Why wouldn't they be drilling on this land that they already have the leases to? Presumably, since the oil companies want to make money by producing oil, if they thought it was going to yield something, they'd be doing it, no?
Well, we have seen, as I mentioned, that sometimes keeping, while you have other drilling going on and other wells producing, that in fact keeping this as potential reserves helps your stock price. And in other times, by having purchased the bid and received the lease bid, that you are also preventing competitors from having it. So, we want them, to the extent that they already have been given the lease, in my view, that we want them to be able to go ahead and explore, but they are not. And we're not talking about that they've, only waited months. In some cases, we're talking about years before they've actually moved their exploration. So, and yet they continue to call for more leasing, and particularly offshore leasing of oil and gas exploration to take place when they are not even pursuing that which they have.
And I see you're introducing a Natural Gas Act to support the use of natural gas as a transportation fuel.
Well, it seems to me that as a transitional fuel, we have a great opportunity, particularly in the truck fleets of our country, to move to natural gas. There is overwhelming supply here in North America. 98% of the natural gas used in the United States originates in North America. Filling a vehicle with natural gas is on average a third cheaper than filling a vehicle with gasoline. But there are 10 million natural gas vehicles in the world on the road, but only 150,000 of them are in the United States. So our effort, and this is a bipartisan effort, and it comes in part from the T. Boone Pickens plan, who listed a whole series of options, is to try to move the truck fleets of our country to natural gas, cleaner burning, ultimately abundant here in the United States, and as a transitional fuel, as we seek to particularly incentivize, greater fuel efficiency, electric cars, and looking at how we move to a renewable energy source portfolio.
What's your position on drilling in that industry? As you know, the technique known as fracking is so controversial in our New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania region.
Yeah, I don't believe that to acquire the natural gas that we are abundant of, that fracking certainly has to be the method by which we achieve the access to that gas. That may, according to the industry, provide them greater amounts and be more productive. But at the end of the day, I have serious concerns about the environmental consequences of fracking.
Let me ask you about the budget. Congress has a new 3-week window after last week's stopgap measure before the apparent big showdown on the House bill making $61 billion in immediate cuts. The Senate, controlled by Democrats, is only for a tiny fraction of that. How will you resolve this without a government shutdown?
Well, it is my view that, we have already cut over $50 billion collectively from the starting point of where we were, where we had already cut $50 billion from the president's budget. There may be some room to move upwards, but there's also going to have some other elements to it, like tax expenditures that maybe should be, repealed as part of the revenue stream. But we can't just
the Bush tax cuts? Is that what you mean by tax?
No, for example, the oil and gas industry has about $35 billion that we collectively as taxpayers give them in a series of tax benefits. They certainly don't need that money from us when we already have seen $75 billion in profits last year alone, and that's notwithstanding the oil spill in the Gulf. So tax expenditures, which basically means provisions of the tax code that give credits that cost the federal treasury money, like that, we need to look at that as well as part of how we have debt reduction. But what I am concerned about, and as I've heard several economists testify, that our concern is that, in fact, in this economic recovery, which is fragile, indiscriminate cuts for the sake of cutting and driven ideologically to a number that has no basis in terms of any public policy determination could very well tip this economy backwards and put us at risk of having the recovery falter. And it will take three times the force to get that economic recovery moving again. So we have been cutting, but we don't need to cut in the indiscriminate way that Republicans are talking about. I think other options have to be on the table to get a budget deal. And I certainly don't aspire to see any more short-term resolutions. I want predictability in the government, predictability for the private sector to know what the government is doing, predictability for our citizens to know what to expect and the services that may be received from the government. And so that means having, a full 6 months to the end of the fiscal year proposition.
We have about 2 minutes left. Senator Menendez from New Jersey, my guest. Republicans say that the additional $61 billion that they want is such a small fraction of the $1.5 trillion deficit this year. It's like 1/25th of the deficit, 1/100th or something of the overall budget. How draconian can you paint that to be compared to more borrowing, they ask?
Well, look, first of all, Republicans were a big part of creating this debt. We have two wars unpaid for in Iraq and Afghanistan. We had, policies that allowed, our marketplace to, I believe in a free market, but there's a difference between a free market and a free-for-all market. And we had policies under the Bush administration that permitted a free-for-all market, and that brought us to the verge of a new depression. And that is ultimately why we've had to get the government engaged.
But here we
are. So we can avoid that. So the bottom line is that if we want to talk about long-term debt, as the president does in his budget, cutting $1 trillion over the next decade, that's about more than domestic discretionary spending, which is only 12% of the overall problem. You have to deal with the other 88% that ultimately deals with entitlements, and then you'll get to real debt relief.
All right. Would you like to single out one spending item that you expect to be very contentious over these next 2.5-3 weeks that you will dig in and fight for, and anything else you'd like to say to our listeners in our last minute?
Well, certainly, we cannot compete in the world without having world-class educational opportunities. And their propositions on the dramatic cuts on Pell Grants and Perkins loans would hurt, for example, 180,000 New Jersey students who would get almost $1,000 reduction, in their assistance. Well, we can't be the global economic leader. We can't be the center of innovation in the world. We can't grow this economy if we don't have a highly educated workforce. So that's the type of investment and commitment that will grow and create prosperity. And the type of cuts that Republicans are talking about in that respect certainly is not acceptable to me, as are writers that have nothing to do with the budget and the fiscal issues that we're talking about, you know, whether that's about a woman's right to choose, whether that's about the EPA's right to make sure that our air is cleaner and our water is safer. I'm not about to accept a series of writers that have nothing to do with the fiscal issues and have everything to do with social policy that the Republicans are pursuing through this process.
New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez, thank you so much for giving us the time this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will take a look at the military aspects of what's happening in Libya today. Stay with us.